This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Okay, abstract jazz. We're rolling.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Ages and Icons. I'm Mike Crisolago.
And I'm Gina Bucci. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Gina. Are you going to leave in that little little beatbox?
Well, I'm going to have to now that,
that you did before.
Now that you just referenced it.
The
my nonsense?
Jazz that you just did, yeah. Thanks for listening to Ages and Icons, everyone. We got a good one today, I think, Gina.
Yeah, I think so, too. 10-2 Cardinal.
Yeah, not that we don't ever have bad ones, but I mean...
Well, this is of course we do. Yeah, 10-2 Cardinal.
Is it Cardinal? I think it's 10-2 Cardinal.
Yeah, I prefer Cardinal.
You're thinking of Cardinal Official.
I am. He's the best. That's right.
Amazing. A Canadian acting legend. I was really, really excited to sit down with her at TIFF and get her on the show. This is really exciting.
You know what? She first came on my radar with Dances with Wolves, which I'm sure
for a
lot of people. And she was incredible in that. And I remember... hearing that she was Canadian and an Indigenous actress back then. And yeah, I loved her in that movie and I've loved her ever since. She's great.
Yeah, absolutely. Legends of the Fall. Mm-hmm. She's on the Canadian show North of 60. I mean, she's been in so many things. She's had a 48-year career as a stage and screen actress.
Mm-hmm. And she's having a resurgence. Can you know that Netflix miniseries that just won a bunch of Emmys, Godless?
Yes, yes.
She's in that.
Yeah.
She's great in that. That's a great miniseries, by the way.
No, it is a great series. Jeff Daniels is fantastic in that, too. That's for another day. But yeah, 10-2 came across my desk for TIFF when she was here for the Toronto International Film Festival in early September. And she actually had three films at TIFF. But one of them, the one that we sat down to talk about, was called Falls Around Her. And this blew my mind. It's her first leading role in a feature film in 48 years as an actress. So Falls Around Her, it's a really nice, I was going to say a sweet movie. It's not a sweet movie. I said this in the interview, it's a simple movie, but it's got a lot of hidden complexities. Basically, it's about a sort of a singer, an Indigenous sort of rock star played by 10-2, mm-hmm. who is on the road, travels the world, and then eventually she comes back home, quits the road, and comes back home to her Indigenous Northern Ontario community to just try to reconnect with the land, you know, get away from that sort of celebrity lifestyle and all the demands of being a rock star, being on the road and touring, and just reconnect with her land, reconnect with her heritage, reconnect with her family and her community and her roots, and how difficult that is for her. Because you can't just leave that other life behind, the life of fame and commitments and demands, and how it sort of finds her even in the middle of this wilderness where she doesn't even own a phone. Mm. And so, yeah, it's a really great little film. It was filmed in Northern Ontario. Darlene Nepponce, I hope I'm pronouncing her last name right, an Ojibwe filmmaker. She's the director, she's the writer, she's the producer. It's an all pretty much Indigenous cast, save for a few of the actors. But it raises a lot of questions, not just about celebrity, not just about a woman returning to her home, but also, there's protests about pipelines and stuff in the film as well, and how the land is being expropriated by the government and by these big companies, and it's being polluted. So there's a lot to unpack. But when you watch the film, there's so much quiet and serenity and just moments that 10-2 is sort of speaking to the audience without literally speaking. You know, she's just alone in the bush collecting wood or collecting bark or just going for a walk in the snow, and all you hear is her feet in the snow. So it's a really beautiful, on the surface, simple film with a lot of deep and important themes and issues running through it.
Okay, so here's Mike's interview with 10-2 Cardinal.
Congratulations on Falls Around Her. It's a really beautiful, beautiful film. I guess the first question probably a lot of people ask you about this film is, how does it feel to be the leading star and playing a sort of a rock star in the film?
Oh, it was fabulous.
Yeah.
You know, it was such a freeing dream for creative energy. No?
Yeah.
And it was just a sheer pleasure.
Yeah, it looked like fun to be on stage and be able to just sort of rock out in those moments where you're singing.
Yeah. Yeah. smokes and mirrors.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, I double-checked to see if it was you singing, but I guess...
It's probably not, because Poudre Faye just did a beautiful job, and
yeah.
I think there's some blending, but the day we tried to do some recording, my voice was so tired.
Yeah.
But, I think that's right. I think we can pretty much say it's Poudre Faye.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's beautiful, the film, the location, the nature, everything. It's such a gorgeous film, and it's beautifully acted by yourself and your co-stars. And it struck me because it's very simple in some ways, but it's also a very complex film in other ways. And so I guess just off the top, what drew you to this part, to this character, to this film?
Well, Darlene. Frankly,
yeah,
because I met her when we were shooting her first feature, and when she approached me about wanting to write a film for me, I said, yes, absolutely. It's about time, my goodness.
Yeah.
and it took her probably about 5 years.
Oh, wow.
To do this, to be able to... But, you know, we're not the first in line for the funds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big block. So, you know, we were hoping to shoot last fall, but funding just didn't fall in place. So we shot it early spring.
Yeah. And did you have a good time just sort of out there in the wilderness shooting this film?
Yes. That was a part of the good time. And also, another part of the good time is I didn't have to worry about, you know, appropriation or the truth of the community or the truth of culture or the truth of any of it. You know, it was just an absolute joy, actually, to be able to sail with what we were shooting in that day. And I trusted Darlene's vision, and it was a great honor to be able to be there in the community, and it just felt like a community. It felt cohesive.
Yeah.
And I guess that's another thing that made it very comfortable.
Now, did you draw on any personal experiences while playing this character? Because she's someone who is very famous outside the community, who then comes home and you see the sort of the two worlds collide. So was there any personal experiences you were able to draw on for this role?
Well, I would say so.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you think?
I would think, but I wanted to make sure.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Yeah. You mentioned Darlene and the community. Darlene, of course, being the director of the film. And the writer.
And producer.
She does it all.
Yes.
And like you said, and then the cast and the community. And it's just, it's a really, you mentioned you don't have to worry about appropriation. And
that's right.
And there's multiple films at TIFF this year, actually, that feature Indigenous First Nations communities or characters, including, like, three that you're in, including Falls Around Her, through Black Spruce and the Grizzlies. So when it comes to the representation of Indigenous and First Nations people and in film and the issues that they face in their communities, has that representation improved over the years since, say, you began your career? Do you notice an improvement in that?
Oh, my God. Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, for one thing, so here we've come to the time when we have every skill that we need to make a film We have the people. They have the expertise. And because when I first started out, we didn't have those elements.
Yeah.
And it's taken a long, long time. You know, I mean, the fact that we have three movies in TIFF is an indication right there that that there is change.
Yeah, and there's even more than three, just three that you're in, but there's even more.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we have the people, and our producer types have been working steadily to kind of build a pathway to the funds. You know,
yeah.
Do you know that when our late brother Gil Cardinal wanted to shoot a miniseries for CBC, they wanted him to have basically a white director to make sure that the funds were, you know, handled in the proper way. And thank goodness the director they asked just plain flat refused.
Yeah.
You know, saying they weren't put under that same microscope as non-Indigenous directors. They weren't asked to have somebody tailing them and trailing them, and their excuse was, well, he hasn't done a feature. And this director said, well, I started out doing documentaries and moved into drama. So what's that about? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to catch racism or paternalism or all of those elements. And so, okay, the film that Tina Keeper produced, I'm real proud of her jam, of her saying, this is the story I want to do, and these are the people I want to do it with. And she was the boss.
Mm-hmm.
It's Tina Keeper's film. So that was great to see. And then there's Darlene, who's right from that community. And she's also been a part of the force of trying to build a pathway to the funds. And as Tina has been, and as other filmmakers that aren't being mentioned right now, this is a front that's been moving forward for a number of years now.
Yeah, it's. I was reading an interview that you had done, and you were talking about when you started out as an actress, you would see other people playing First Nations characters or Indigenous characters, and they would be painting their skin. They'd be white people painting their skin to portray these characters. And now, not only your success but you look at, I think it was earlier this year, right? You were asked by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences to join the Academy to increase cultural diversity at the Oscars.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just in your career, in your lifetime, the people painting their skin to now you're on the Academy. So, I mean,
yes.
Does that give you hope going forward that cultural diversity and representation will increase?
Absolutely. The only way that I've been able to survive is that there's been bits of hope all along the way. And the absolute confidence and the assurance in my own inner world that our ancestors have not been seen yet by this society. And to know the depth and profundity of the civilization that we come from as Indigenous people, primarily matrilineal civilization,
yeah.
You know, is where we come from. And I've said for years, we are the missing enzyme, guys. Quit trying to outlaw us. Quit trying to push us aside. Quit trying to make us look like we're the dummies here. You know,
yeah.
We haven't even begun sharing some real essential qualities, elements, everything,
yeah.
You know, to make this a stronger society.
Right. And you had this really beautiful quote in a little piece that I read where you were talking about spending time as a child with your grandmother in nature. And you said that I could walk in the bush behind my grandmother and know that there's a whole world out there that's connected to sound and the wind and the energy. And that's where I learned how to act, from walking behind my grandmother. And yeah. I wanted to ask you if you could elaborate a little bit on that, about how your formative years at home with family like your grandmother informed your artistic career.
Well, you know, we're not a society. Like, I didn't live in the same building as a TV until I was 16 years old and going to school in the city.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have television. We didn't have telephones. We had radio. And we have a sense of entertainment. You know, when the stories, sharing the news, all of these things were a part of my life. Now, it's a misrepresentation or a misinterpretation to say that, you know, it sounds like I spent a lot of time with my grandmother in the bush. Not a, you know, I mean, I spent a lot of time alone in the bush as well.
Mm-hmm.
And having that contact, because where was the audience? It were the trees, you know, the communities, the friends were the birds and all of that part of it. I mean, I did have friends, yes, and part of school, but there's a lot of time spent alone. Where I'm getting my images and my impulses or whatever is feeding my creativity is from a clean place that wasn't manufactured by a games company or you know, movies that were being created by other people. I did see movies, but those were on occasional trips to the city, to the town of Fort McMurray, or when the forestry would bring fire prevention films on a sidecar. They would bring cartoons along with those fire prevention films and a feature, possibly.
Oh, wow.
So those were my early days of entertainment. So you can see, we'd better start amusing ourselves.
Now, when you are offered roles today, either in film or television or on stage, do the types of roles you get offered differ now than when you were starting out in your career?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for one thing, this is my first feature
mm-hmm.
in a 48-year career. That should be able to illustrate that most of the stories were led by other characters other than the indigenous woman.
Right.
There are young women that have, you know, played leads. And Tina Keeper herself played a lead on North of 60 for a number of years.
Right.
And so I guess for me, it's kind of, you know, it's a double-pronged thing in that, you know, this is my first opportunity in all those years to play a lead. And I'm a woman of a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's because primarily what's going on in film business, you know, they'll have younger people playing the leads and telling the stories. It's been a great frustration for me. Many, many times that I am just a color or some kind of background for these lead characters. That's their stories. It's not my stories.
Right.
And it's been so frustrating only to be able to share just a moment or a flash or a piece of wisdom or something like that. And not having my character's life really respected in terms of the overall story that we tell.
Going forward in your career, I know we're talking about representation and such, but just in general, are there particular either, you know, actual characters or types of roles that you maybe haven't taken on that you would love to give a shot?
So many. too many. Too many of our stories that have to be told through our eyes.
What's an example of maybe one that we haven't seen yet or haven't seen enough of that we need to see that you would hope to take on maybe?
Oh my God, where would you even start?
I know there's so many, right?
There's so many, and there has been a habit of trying to hide who we are as Indigenous people from the rest of Canada, because actually this is stolen land that everybody's having a great time on here. You know, this whole land was appropriated in a very bad way. It was thieved. It was manipulated. It was just built on flat out lies and racism and colonialism and imperialism and all that stuff. Like, who are these people that really have decided that they have the right to the world?
Mm-hmm.
And they've taken it for themselves. And we are the shame of that conquest. Because all this dignity, humanity, oh, we stand for human rights, but you just turn around just a degree, and there is the truth of where we are in all of that dignity and righteousness. And so all the mechanisms are in place to kind of muffle our voice, to keep us out of the room, so the neighbors don't really hear what goes on in our place, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a part of the struggle that we have as storytellers, is that that wall that's been built to keep us out of the mix. You know what? What would be really interesting is to get the real truth of the mechanics of the financial world done by our economists, by our financiers, and by our people who are doctors of the law, of treaties, the Constitution, and all of that. I would really like to see that stuff brought out into the light of day, so that all these people who think that all us Indians are just sitting around siphoning off all the good stuff for free, for nothing. You know, I mean, there's so much misinformation out there. Yeah. You can't even call it information. It's so bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's tactic. It's words and ideas of tactic.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that's when I'm feeling dark. All those things come to the surface. But, you know, there's probably a lot of fun stuff that we can talk about too.
No, you know what though? That's I'm really happy that you said that, because I can imagine as an artist like yourself or in your community, if you want to tell those stories and you try to bring those forward, how difficult it must be to get somebody to listen, to give you money, to give resources, to get those stories told and made.
So, and, that's right.
Yeah. And I don't think we appreciate that difficulty enough. And even, like you said, even Falls Around Her, you know, took years to get made. So now you, of course, aside from being an actor, you're also an activist. You have many other things going on in your life as well. I know you've been, you know, you've protested the Keystone XL pipeline and the high profile. They arrested you in front of the White House and such in 2011.
Yes.
So, you know, going forward in your career and in your life, whether it's acting or environmentalism, what have you, what goals do you still hold that you hope to achieve?
Well, I guess I see no separation between personally and professionally, unfortunately. But so that, what does that make me, a one-trick pony? but I just this year got a grant to start exploring my own stories.
Oh.
So that's a project that is just filling me with enthusiasm. And I'm just desperately looking for the time to go back into my home territory and get the stories and the memories, the oral history that is of my past. Because with all these years that I've been in this industry telling, being a part of telling stories, they were never my stories. They're my stories in the sense that I belong to one, two, three, four, at least four or five different nations. And my world of Indigenous, my mother's world, is so strong in my heart and my soul and my spirit and who I am and why I'm still alive, why I'm still here, is because of that wish that we are respected and acclaimed or, you know, seen as human beings. This whole climate catastrophe situation that we're in, the people that are suffering right now are the poor people, the Indigenous people. You know, is that why it's taking so long? Is that why the government went ahead and bought a pipeline anyways the day after the Supreme Court said no? What is that stink little rodent that's in the midst of this gap between undrinkable water in our communities and a high level of education? You know, I mean, there's just so many things but what was I answering?
you were talking about exploring your own story, and I just wanted to clarify, did you mean like your own, like your personal family heritage?
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
My family heritage.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, I know what I was starting to, I was trying to say, is that in all those 48 years, it's so rare that I was able to tell any Métis stories.
Right.
You can't tell one hat with the number of opportunities that I got to play Métis. So I'm hoping, you know, to be able to be a part of creating some more of these stories. I haven't really done that bit yet, you know, to be writing or producing or directing, but right now I'm thinking in terms of researching and teaching, so we'll see.
No, that sounds amazing. And just lastly, before we go, I wanted to ask you about, I mean, there's Falls Around Her, which we're talking about today, but obviously, as we said, there's about six or so films about Indigenous communities and people at TIFF. But even for people who come across this interview long after TIFF is done, and there's more representation out there, and we see more stories like this from these Indigenous communities, what do you hope that the rest of us take away from these stories when we go watch these films?
I hope you go, oh, I don't really know the truth about these communities. I don't really know. Something's missing. So what we have to do as Indigenous people, the task that we've set for ourselves, is we call it decolonizing ourselves. And I think that's something that everybody else should be doing, too, is decolonizing your own mind, because people have been brainwashed generation after generation after generation to consider us lesser. So if people will sort of pick through their brains and in their whole systems and say, okay, what's off? You know, what have I been carrying around that's not even true? That would be fun. That would be nice.
I love that, decolonization. That's a really great term. I haven't heard that before.
Yeah,
not in the,
you know, we're always kind of a step ahead.
Yeah.
territory.
You know what? I've seen films and read stories about these communities, and these are things that I didn't learn in school growing up. And
yeah, of
and
course
I,
you wouldn't.
No, and I hope that going forward, our children, our grandchildren, what have you, are far more exposed to the full story of all the people in this country than I was growing up. And I'm sure people of your generation and going back and back were as well when they just went through regular school here in Canada.
Exactly. And check this out. And maybe a part of that history will be when Doug Ford stepped forward and tried to abolish the education that was determined essential in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Yeah.
And people have been working forward to correcting that in the education system, and he steps forward and wants to toss that out.
Yeah. Well, I personally believe that we always move forward eventually, and people like that, they're going to, the history won't remember them well, I hope. And I look forward to seeing more of your work and learning more of these stories. And I just want to say congratulations again on this beautiful film. It was wonderful to watch.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're back. Good interview, Mike.
Thanks. Yeah, she's a lot of fun to talk to. Tantu is 68, and like you said, she sort of got her first, you know, I'm ready for my close-up moment, mm-hmm. and she's got so much going on.
She deserves it.
Yeah, absolutely. She made me laugh. There's a few times in the interview where she gets very serious.
Yeah.
And you know, deservedly so. And there was one time where she was talking about, you know, the stories that she would like to be told during, by Indigenous filmmakers and Indigenous writers and such. And she was saying, I just have it transcribed here, and talking about the mechanics of the financial world done by our economists, by our financiers, and by our people who are the doctors of the law and the Constitution and such. And she's talking about all the misinformation out there. And when she's feeling dark, all those things come to the surface. And then she sort of pauses and has that little giggle. And she says, but, you know, there's probably a lot of fun stuff we can talk about, too.
Yeah.
She's got a great, like, sense of humor. While she's very obviously honest and very serious about what she's doing, she has that lighthearted side as well.
Well, because she's been doing this, and by this I mean being an activist for her people, for a very long time.
Of course,
and,
she has,
you know, she's earned the sense of humor about it all. She certainly has. Yeah, it must be exhausting. So you got to have a sense of humor in order to fuel, right?
Oh, of course. Like you said, she's been doing it for a long time. She even mentioned, like, she in the interview that she couldn't get on, she couldn't keep doing it without having that hope, like without having some sense of hope within her that things will get better.
Yeah.
It also sort of floored me when she talked about when she was growing up. You know, of course, she didn't have video games, she didn't have TV, she didn't have computers and stuff like that. But that the only films she saw were like the forestry films that the government would bring in, like,
into Fort McMurray.
I know, like, imagine if, like, I mean, she's already a brilliant actress, and all she had to go off of was forestry films and performing in the bush for the trees and the birds and stuff, as she said. Imagine if she had, like, you know, actual cinema films to, like, sort of go off of when she was young.
Well, that performing that she was saying that the people in her community had to do in order to entertain themselves, mm-hmm. Is certainly probably what lit the spark in the first place for her.
Absolutely,
for performing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, everything has, there's a reason for everything.
Absolutely. And imagine, like, the intimacy of being in your community and performing for each other to entertain yourselves and to pass along the stories of your culture and your community, how, like the intimacy of that and how that brings you to, like, a certain place as a performer.
Oh, yeah, that's theater, you know, training,
like,
right there.
It is, yeah. And, like no wonder she's such a brilliant actress and has been so successful for so many years. You know, because if in some ways it's even harder to do it in front of, like, a small, intimate group like that.
Yes,
you know?
because unlike being on stage in front of, you know, 100 people or more, there's such an intimacy, and especially if you're doing stories about your community,
of course,
and
yeah.
that they could all get. There's also, like, the smell test, you know?
Yeah,
And she sort of was forced to be authentic or...
Right.
Or so, for
that's
sure,
a very good point,
that's...
Yeah.
That's probably the best theater training I can think of.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
It's such an incredible experience.
Yeah. And she mentioned, too, like, it was really a really profound thing that I thought she said. She said that, I'm so grateful for that experience, that whatever is feeding my creativity is from a clean place that wasn't manufactured by a games company or movies that were being created by other people. So...
Yeah.
To that point earlier about only watching forestry films, like, imagine if she had been inundated with, like, pop culture and stuff, you know, how would that have changed her? Because it was so pure that she was allowed to sort of get her creativity from her own community and her own place in the world and not be influenced by everything on the outside.
Well, so many great actors have that type of outlook, and then those come from those experiences. Because if you think about it, or even it's not even just limited to actors; it's artists in general. If you're not, I mean, seeing other art, of course, has its place, and it inspires mm-hmm. you to create art as well. But if you're not, and you're insulated a little bit, then you have the ability to kind of be very unique because you're just doing what you are,
right.
you know?
Absolutely.
And you're staying true to yourself because that's all you know.
Yeah. And not being influenced by the same people that everybody else is being influenced in the same films and the same stories and all that.
So I think that that really does lend to a lot of her authenticity on screen for sure. For sure. Yeah.
No, she is such a not just a talent, but like a treasure for Canadian arts and culture and our community, just as our communal Canadian community. And, you know, the fact that there were, I think, at least six Indigenous-focused, Indigenous-themed films at TIFF this year featuring, you know, First Nations and Indigenous actors and directors and writers and storylines that were focused on those communities. That is a huge jump, as she mentioned, and she was in three of them. But, like, that wouldn't be happening today if someone like Tantu wasn't working for the last 48 years to sort of push for that and to make people, like, open their eyes and realize that there's those stories to be told. So, I mean, aside from just her work on the screen, the fact, like you said, that she's been working so hard for this for so many years, for decades now, almost 50 years. I mean, that's also part of her legacy, even though she's not even in some of those movies.
Right. That's it, Mike. Anything else you want to add?
No, I just wanted to thank Tantu for her time. And you know, who else we have to thank that we should have been thanking from the beginning is our audio producer, Kelly.
Oh, we don't like to say how the sausage is made, but Kelly makes it great. Kelly helps us out when we have phone calls. And
She sets us up in her studio here at the Zoomerplex with all the great equipment and patches the phone calls through and makes sure that it all runs smoothly and the recording sounds great.
And she's just an all-around lovely gal.
She is
so
sweet. She's always so happy around us. Like, she's such a positive person. So thank you so much, Kelly, as always. And thank you to Gina, of course, and everyone listening. And we'll see you next time on Ages and Icons.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.